Welcome to Passy Mears CAM Podcast, Conversations on Aerodigestive Management. This episode of CAM features your host, Dr. Kristen King, and guest, Michelle Dawson, having a conversation on pediatric feeding disorders and the relationship with caregiver coaching.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Conversations on Aerodigestive Management, the CAM Podcast. Today, I'm continuing my conversation with Michelle Dawson, a speech-language pathologist who specializes in pediatric feeding disorders. Michelle, I want to thank you for joining me again as we're going to continue our conversation. Last episode, we talked a little bit about counseling and pediatric feeding disorders and special considerations. And today, I want to continue that by talking about interprofessional collaboration and caregiver coaching, because one piece that you brought up that I just wanted to reinforce is we don't practice in a silo, and that interprofessional practice and having that multidisciplinary team is critical to what we do. You know, knowing what everyone brings to the table, and we all have you know, the pieces to the puzzle, and making sure, you know, that we have all those components is critical in the care of basically every patient that we see. It's, you know, it's not even just pediatric feeding disorders. It's critical that we are aware of what they bring to the table and what piece of evaluations each person contributes, you know, and that we have an understanding of every other profession's role. I just wanted to reemphasize where you shared that, because it is so critical to providing best care.
Yes. And have that. And even within our world of speech pathology, like, I am not the tricks and buns guru. That makes my belly kind of knot up and get a little squeamish, right? Like, I remember one time somebody, and they coughed through and this thing came out of their throat, and I'd never seen that before. And it looked like a mucus plug. Like, I mean, it was a mucus plug. And I was like, I cannot do this, but I don't need to do this, because there are colleagues like yourself that thrive in that world. Mm-hmm. And I need you on my team so that when I have a patient that comes in, I can say, hey, I've got this kid on my caseload and I know how to do the thing that I do, but you know how to do the thing that you do. Help me, make me better, mentor me. And that's something that I find a lot of us, especially when we're super green and first starting in the world of dysphagia, we're so afraid to admit what we don't know. Like, I will hear something and say, that doesn't sound right in how that child's voicing. Let me send them to the VPI clinic. Or I'll watch them regurgitate. Like, I've had several patients that have Down syndrome with that. They have comorbid diagnoses of flaccid dysarthria. But is it flaccid dysarthria driven by the CP, or is it velopharyngeal insufficiency? I don't know. But what I do know is if I see gastric contents coming out of your nose and we have nasal regurgitation, I now have a worry, especially when we're like four, right? Mm-hmm. So I refer out to the specialist who then tells me, this is what you're seeing. Hey, this is a better treatment methodology for this versus this. And then we come together as a team, because VPI might need surgery versus flaccid dysarthria has a totally different approach, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we do, as profession, as speech language pathologists, we have to be able to admit what we know and what we don't know. Because we can't, there's no way, especially with how our profession's evolving and expanding, and there's just no way for us to know everything.
Yes.
I mean, even I've been practicing over 25 years. I'm still constantly looking at textbooks, finding mentors, you know, and learning. It's just a continual learning process.
Well, Dr. Georgia Melendrecki, who's now an ASHA fellow, she's the immediate past president of the Dysphagia Research Society, which has an amazing conference everybody should go to. Her lab is called Purdue IEATS Lab. And her wife, they co-lead this lab. The research coming out of that lab is so rapid fire changing what we know about even mastication patterns. Like when I was in grad school, we were taught the rotary chew, that final chew pattern, had to be fully evolved by 4. Well, the work coming out by Dr. Malandracki, we now know that that mastication pattern doesn't have to evolve until 12. And that children that have CP, it's not a low strength component as to why they may still be engaging in like a vertical mastication pattern. It's that they have different types of tone presenting in their bodies because of the cerebral palsy, which is also why non-speech oral motor exercises don't work. This is why we utilize food. And it's just utterly groundbreaking, but that's all within the last handful of years. Another amazing researcher, Dr. Amy Delaney with Marquette Pediatric Feeding Lab from Marquette University. Her work is also, Dr. Amy Delaney is just, she's fiery. I love her. Totally admire her as a human and her research. But she's also one of the pillars that volunteers with Feeding Matters. So, and her passion and focus area is fine-tuning the feeding skill component of the pediatric feeding disorder terminology. But like, we're living in that moment where like the Leonardo da Vinci's of swallowing are doing their research. And that's cool. And I just like fangirl from the side and like, yay, keep doing it.
It is cool. And then we have to be aware of what they're finding. I didn't know that about the rotary chew that you just shared, because I've been immersed more in the trach and vent world for a while. Yes. So I haven't really looked at that recently. And yeah, I mean, it's just amazing how we're just constantly learning new things. Yes. And I think it leads nicely. I want to make sure we don't miss out on the caregiver coaching and what you're looking at as far as, you know, how that relates to the pediatric, because you've mentioned it a couple of times. So I want to make sure we clarify, like, how does caregiver coaching relate to pediatric feeding disorders? And then, you know, what's our role with that as PFD SLPs? Like, what's our role with caregiver coaching?
So I'm going to start with a thank you and a website. Okay. So one, I thought I knew what I was doing with respect to caregiver coaching. Like I was like, I've been in early intervention for forever. I know what I'm doing. I did not know my bootay from my elbow. I truly didn't, because I had gone through grad school. When I was in school, it was direct service delivery. That's what I was taught. You meet the child at the door, you do your direct intervention, and you take the child back to the caregivers. And then you say in 30 seconds, this is what we did. And then ta-da, it's magically going to get better, right? As I went through the world of early intervention, I realized, hey, we're actually supposed to be coaching the caregivers on what to do. So my interpretation, because I went to some conferences, but not any specific conferences from researchers in the area, but just like general presentations, was that I'm supposed to tell the parent what to do. You with me? So I was really good at telling the parent what to do, right? And then I was like, oh no, I'm not supposed to bring toys in. And oh, you mean I don't have to wake the face up? And oh, non-speech oral motor exercises are like not a good thing. Okay, so I was like, I'm starting to trickle down the current evidence-based practice approach. Like I was getting there, right? Until I met Dr. Burns. Dr. Francis Burns' focus area truly is caregiver coaching from the family-guided routines-based intervention approach. So I always have to double check. So folks, if you're listening and not driving, it's fgrbi.com. If you type in .net, you get a tire place, but there is a whole approach within the world of early intervention called routines-based intervention. And family-guided routines-based is one specific subset of that that's been incredibly well researched and led by Dr. Juliana Woods, who is a early intervention expert. And Dr. Burns, who is the current chair of Francis Marion University, she set a graduate program up in Qatar for speech pathology. She served with Department of Defense, but it was the education component. She's been in South Korea, where she's had advanced training, all on family-guided routines-based, and the DOD I think it's EDSI, but I feel like I'm butchering the acronym. So please, somebody somewhere is like, I know the acronym you're looking for. But she filled my cup while I worked with her for a little over a year and a half as her caregiver, I'm sorry, as her graduate studies clinical practical coordinator. So I taught a bunch of classes and did the PFD there in her university clinic and da-da-da. She absolutely fundamentally changed my outlook and how I go in and do a comprehensive early intervention assessment, even for PFD, through the lens of caregiver coaching. So what this looks like is I go in and on that first session, I'm doing my clinical swallow evaluation because I don't do instrumentals, you know, where I'm in the homes or I'm in the university clinic. Those are my two settings. But if it's indicated and I need to send out for an instrumental, then I will, right? On that second session, either we're holding the IFSP meeting or I'm having my family guided routines based interview. My favorite interview, you can find it for free. It's a PDF. It's by R.A. McWilliams. And what it means is I work with the family from the moment the caregiver opens their eyes in the morning. And I say caregiver because it might not be mom. It could be an aunt. It could be a grandparent. It could be a single dad. It could be a foster parent, right? But from the moment that caregiver opens their eyes in the morning to the moment that they close them and go to sleep at night, we go through every aspect in detail through the day. And oftentimes, because of the nature of the work that I do, I am evaluating for language, early language, in conjunction with pediatric feeding disorder. And we assess, where are your worry moments? Essentially, we do this faith component at before we put our kids to bed. Tell me your low point of your day and tell me your high point. It kind of works through like that. Tell me your low point, tell me your high point. That's how I process it. We go through it. And then I plug in, where can I take my skills and my strategies and plug them into that caregiver's day? So I'm not doing direct service delivery. I am asking the caregiver, have you thought about this? What is your worry? And truly asking specific open-ended questions. So letting the caregiver feel empowered to come up with an idea, or feeling empowered and creating a safe space for them to say, hey, I am concerned about this rash, or the doctor wants me to try this new medicine. Are you aware of it? Have you heard of it? What do I do, right? Mm-hmm. And within my scope of practice, coaching and guiding, right? And that is absolutely fundamentally a game changer. There are 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week. I am a clinician, not a magician, and I get 1 hour. That might mean that there's 167 hours that they're dependent on their caregiver. There is nothing I can do. And I'll say it again for the people in the back. There is nothing you can do in 1 hour through direct service delivery with the caregiver on the other side of the room. It's going to make a hill beans difference for that baby. Right?
So right.
Yeah. But it's true. But if I spend that hour, I don't need to touch the baby. I mean, sometimes I might need to like actually do like a positional change or like a bottle flow change or like changing of like where the breast is or like just modeling how to like mince a particular food up so it hits like an itsy 4 or 5 as opposed to still being a 7. But like those tiny little changes, right? But like then I can model that and then have the caregiver implement it. And then we can go on, but that's normally for like a patient safety, or if I'm doing ADA language simulation on a speech generating device, like if I'm plugging away on that, then like that's me modeling it. And then I immediately put it in the hands of the caregiver and say, okay, your turn. Now you show me, like, because if I show them, hey, how this looks in like 30 seconds, that's it. The rest of it is you do. I'm just here. I am your ally, but
that's how you're going to get the carryover. And the generalization. Yes. I mean, otherwise, that's the problem with the 1 hour is they're not going to know what to do at home.
Yes. Yes. But you try telling that to some of the people, not all of them, some of them are on it. But I have been to the private practices where I'm like, so how come you're taking the baby away? Why are we not? What are we doing? Help. And my favorite response is, well, we're working on addressing the child's behaviors around mealtime. And so we don't want the parent present because it causes the behaviors to be worse. And I'm like, well, darling, I want you to think this through because the parents gonna be present for the rest of the meals. So if you're doing snack on a Tuesday afternoon at 4:30 after a full day of school, and did you even check? Maybe they have to pee because I mean, I got to hit the head after I get done with work from a long day, right? So instead of taking the kid away, let's coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I won't even go there. I started to, because that's such a perfect example. And I sat there going, yes, like, what would you do if the parent, if the behaviors are occurring at the meals with the parents, but you don't work with the parents and with the whole, we have to take that holistic approach, not isolate and focus on one aspect. I mean, it's just not going to work without it.
That's, but again, your caregiver is the core of the team. Mm-hmm. And if your caregiver is failing, and I don't mean failing from a, like, they're not able to implement the strategy. If your caregiver is walking the PFD journey and they're in the valley because of their emotions, because maybe they've got, what is it, like 50 to 60% of children with special needs, their parents' marriage will end in divorce. We don't know what's going on. I can't tell you how many children I've worked with that I found out the parents are having, they're going through a divorce, or we don't know if there's a loved one in the family that they're worried about because they're battling dementia. So now the caregiver that I'm working with has a child with a PFD and has a caregiver they're trying to take care of as well. And so it's, we have to sit back, and when we're doing these RBIs and we're doing these comprehensive interviews, don't just do one and think that's going to last for the duration of the IFSP. Touch base every single week, every single week. Mom, have that strategy work. Mom, last time I was here, you told me about this doctor's appointment that you were really excited about going to. How'd that turn out? Hey, Mom, remember you mentioned that the cardiologist might be prescribing a new medication? What'd they put you on? I literally have had moms tell me, oh, I don't remember the name of the medicine, but we had to get it compounded at the specialty pharmacy. Ding, 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 ding. Like, all my bells and whistles are going up, because if you're going to the specialty pharmacy for a 6-month-old, something's going on. And one of them, sure enough, it was Lasix, because the kid was in congestive heart failure because the holes in their heart had exacerbated. That changed how I'm going to render my service delivery and my coaching, because now it's a, how many calories are we burning trying to get this in? And do we need to pitch for an NG tube or maybe a permanent G tube while we work on being stabilized from a cardiac perspective?
So I have a question for you that just popped into my mind, because I used to emphasize frequently that we have to be counselors. You know, we have to provide that counseling and education. And well, actually what I said was we have to provide counseling, and counseling is education. You know, versus counseling, providing both. It's a, you know, it's all rolled into one in my head. Ma'am. How would you link that to the caregiver coaching?
It's the same.
Okay.
Counseling.
That's what I mean. Coaching. It sounded, but I was like, I wasn't sure. So
it is to me intimately, intricately intertwined.
Okay.
I can't coach if I can't counsel. But me being able to coach and counsel a caregiver means that my mental health, my biases, as best as I can address them, my emotional intelligence, as best as I can address them, because it's never, and I say that for both of those, as best as I can address them, because that's an ongoing evolution of a human. You keep growing, otherwise you stop. But I have to continue growing there. If I stagnate there, then my ability to counsel and coach deteriorates.
Another piece that came to me in listening is a lot of what we do is in the word that came to my head was, are in the nuances versus, mm-hmm. you know, they're not in our face information. Like, we have to be able, our understanding has to be pretty broad, because just like you mentioned, a mother mentioning she went to the compound pharmacy, you know, mm-hmm. or had to go to the a special pharmacy to have her medication compounded. And you're like, ding, 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 you know, what's happening here? And we have to be able to recognize those things, that contribute more information to what we're trying to provide. We have to have a broad enough knowledge, you know, and understanding of things to be able to ask the right questions,
you know, which that means you have to be a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard because literally I was taught model, 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 right? Like talk, 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 but we can't do that. And if you're, and I am 1000% guilty of getting in and I get so excited, especially when I come off a new conference. Last week, I wrapped up Feeding Matters annual conference. And I went to NBSLA, the National Black Speech Language Hearing Association, two conferences in like the span of 2 weeks. My brain is on fire because I'm so excited about the information I learned. I learned from a researcher out of Old Dominion University, which is where I got my undergrad. So like, yay, that 50 to 60% of the juvenile, of individuals in juvenile detention have a cognitive-based communication disorder, but a judge declares them competent based off of no real standardized assessments. And what are we doing, right? Like my brain's on fire. Like how can we go in and save these babies who may not know, and they're not babies, but like they're babies. And so like that, like my brain in the background is chewing on that knowledge, but like, when you go to a conference, when your soul is reignited with this new fact, like that a mastication pattern may not be fully developed until 12 years of age, even within the CP population, that should challenge you to change how you practice on Tuesday, right? And with that same passion, you can't go into a therapy session and just word vomit all the details at the caregiver because they're going to be like, Michelle. And I had one mom tell me, honey, when you get excited, you sound like a professor and I don't understand what you're saying. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She goes, it's okay. You love what you do. I love that you love what you do. But make it real simple for me, please. She said, as I was chasing after her three-year-old in the room doing like we were, he's almost three. We were doing a deep pressure simulation because he likes to body crash for regulation. So I'm body crashing because she's recovering from a C-section that she just had with her five-week-old. And so like, normally she would do like body crashing or like throw pillows at him, but like she couldn't. I mean, again, she just had a C-section, which is why I was doing like more body crash. Oh my gosh, I play. And I love that I get to play with my babies.
It is about balance.
Yeah.
And speaking of balance, we've mentioned people need to be aware, learn, be counselors, learn about caregiver coaching. Do you have any resources that you could share on where people can go to actually start this process?
Yes. So Family Guided Routines Based Intervention, FGRBI.com has free, so many free documents. They have free tutorials and webinars about how to engage in coaching. That's one great resource. The R.A. McWilliams PDF for a RBI routines-based interview. You can just Google R.A. McWilliams RBI interview and it pops right up. The Routines-Based Early Intervention, Supporting Young Children and Their Families by R.A. McWilliam. It's a textbook, but it's only like $40. Also, Early Intervention Every Day, Embedding Routines and Daily Routines, Embedding Activities and Daily Routines for Young Children by Merle Crawford. She's an OT. Those are some excellent books. Those are some really good resources, but honestly, finding a mentor. Mm-hmm. So certain, and not just, and SIG 20, hello, SIG 20 is for counseling within the world of speech pathology. So also finding a mentor that does routines-based intervention. So not all states have a great early intervention system. I'm coming from South Carolina, literally have battled for 11 years with our state early intervention system because there are significant patient safety deficits. On my 40th birthday, I spent 2 hours working in a meeting, volunteering my time in March on testimony for systemic changes again. Thank you, Kelly Caldwell is the SCSHA VP of Governmental Affairs. I am possibly one of Kelly's biggest fans. If you haven't had her on your podcast, you need Kelly Caldwell on your podcast. The woman's brilliant. She actually does the adult Drake's vents and voice changes and all of that. And she tells me about her day and I'm like, I pulled a booger out of a baby's nose while we were doing that.
I actually know Kelly very well. She was a student of mine in a past life. But yeah, I love Kelly also.
So two thoughts. One, you have to find a mentor within the framework of early intervention that does caregiver coaching the way it should be done, that adheres to IDEA Part C. But that also means that in this journey, I guarantee you're going to find that there are deficits within your state. There are deficits within your state system, because fortunately, there's only a handful of states that adhere to current evidence-based approach for truly understanding what caregiver coaching is within the world of early intervention. And there's only so many states that actually recognize PFD as a standalone diagnosis for an automatic referral within early intervention. Okay, so those are a couple of things to take apart. But if your state doesn't recognize PFD as a standalone diagnosis, as an automatic referral for warranting early intervention services, or your state has a subpar EI system, find you a Kelly Caldwell, and then also maybe just Kelly Caldwell. Or be the Kelly Caldwell and grow and advocate. But like, that's all predicated, like, you got to learn how to do that, which then makes me turn around and go, wait, by the time this comes out in May, I interviewed the ASHA CEO on the Leadership Development Program. And that program is instrumental in helping people become and be equipped with leadership tools. I graduated years ago. It's phenomenal. I highly recommend. You want to learn how to be the Kelly Caldwell, then take the class. Yeah.
That is a nice program that they offer. ASHA actually has several programs that are linked to mentorship. You know, they have the STEP program. They have, there was another one that I was a mentor for a while. Anyway, maybe we'll add that. They have a couple of different programs, plus the leadership program that are available for SLPs.
Okay. Yes.
Michelle, this podcast is so chock full of information, and I want to thank you for being on. It has been incredible to chat with you and listen to you. You're obviously very passionate about PFD. And yes, ma'am. Your passion comes across. And I think I'm hoping that this will inspire listeners to jump on the bandwagon and, you know, really focus and maybe re-energize their practices as they look at these kiddos, whether it's in the schools or a medical setting or an outpatient clinic or private practice or home health. No matter their setting, they can apply what you've been talking about. And I just really thank you for being on with me.
Well, thank you. I love what I do. And I love, the podcast was my very dearest, bestest friend, Erin Ford. She was my student once upon a time. And it was her idea when she was my student to do the podcast, because I made the comment off the cuff about how cool is it that we get to do the first bites and the first sips with the least of these. And she goes, and that's what you need to name the podcast. I was like, what are you talking about? And so, ta-da, 5 years later.
And I hope people tune into your podcast, because it's another resource for information on all things pediatrics. And I thank you so much for your time. And
thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of CAM. We are happy to offer continuing education credit through ASHA for this podcast. To receive credit, please go to www.passymuir.com/podcast and click on the continuing education link under this episode. Then you will either create an account or log into your existing education portal account. Complete the quiz and course evaluation for your podcast episode. Your certificate will be available for download once completed.